All right, everyone's good. Quickly, I'll just introduce myself. Lenny Rosenzweig. Although usually when I speak, due to the some say flawless, some say almost flawless American accent, people think that I grew up here, which is not correct. I grew up in Israel, but my parents spoke English at home, flawless English. And as a result of that, sounds like I'm from here, but I'm not. I'm from Israel, and I'm Rosh Yeshiva of a yeshiva called Hamivtar, and I became Rosh Yeshiva 6 months ago. So hopefully you'll see me yearly, traveling around to recruit and so forth. And that's basically it for post-college students. If you want to know more about it, I'm sure you can Google it or whatever. Well, it's all good. The topic basically that I wanted to discuss is that of ethics and halacha. Maybe I'll give a little bit of a background knowledge to this topic. More or less, I think that when someone goes through a process of Jewish education, with the time he realizes that there are some things that seem to bother us, some things about halacha that seems to bother us, certain, what I would say, conflicts, certain things that we feel are problematic. Yeah, we read about slavery, and we feel like we're against slavery. And we know about cases where women need a divorce, and they can't get one, and halacha says the husband has to give it, and we feel that that's not right, you know, and things like that. So there are all kinds of things that we meet, that we find out, so to speak, as we go along, that seem to contradict our ethical beliefs within halacha. And so we find ourselves in conflict. Usually, what we do in such situations is that we solve these problems ad hoc. Meaning, oh, that's the goyim of back then, and that's because of that, and that issue that's solved that way. Yeah, so everything, single thing, we solve a different way. So at a certain point, I kind of got sick and tired of doing that. I said to myself that it doesn't make any sense that there are so many conflicts between ethics and halacha. And if there are so many conflicts, they must not be real. In other words, what does that mean, they must not be real? It means there must be a reason for them, one reason. In other words, my basic understanding, my basic realization at a certain point was that perhaps the reason there are so many is because that they all stem from one issue, from one problem, from one misunderstanding. And if we just fix that misunderstanding, if we just fix our understanding of what halacha is, and of what ethics is, if we fix that, then we'll be able to handle all these problems. Meaning, because there are so many, they must all stem from the same point. That was kind of the realization that I got to, or the thought that I had. As a result, I think there are pages around, right? Yeah. As a result, I decided to write a paper on the issue. This was about 8 years ago. So I wrote about 60 pages on the issue, and the basic structure of the work was the first 20 or so pages, I guess a third of the work was basically to discuss certain issues of philosophy of halacha. The second half, was to discuss basically the structure of the ethical system, and the third was to discuss how those two things come together and what that means basically in terms of ethics and halacha. That was more or less the structure of the piece. Today, within an hour, we're going to kind of like breeze through certain parts of it. I will largely disregard the second third. In other words, the part about the ethical. The part about the ethical demands a certain in-depth analysis of ethical texts, such as we'd have to go into Aristotle's Ethics, we'd have to go into Hobbes's egotistical ethical system based on a psychological principle, Kant's deontological ethics, certain different things that we'd have to go into and analyze in order to properly understand the ethical system that we have. It would demand a lot of, like I said, a lot of comparisons and so forth, which we obviously cannot do. Instead of going into all those secular philosophies, we're going to assume that I know what I'm doing, and we're going to just focus more or less on the issue of the halacha and how that works in with ethics later on. But you should know that there is, of course, work to do in terms of the ethical system. I guess the first thing we have to do is discuss a little bit about philosophy of halacha. My grandfather's sitting here, so I'm taking a chance. But I would say that probably in the history of Jewish thinking, I'd say no one really spoke about the philosophy of halacha before the Rav, before Rav Soloveitchik wrote his Isha Halacha, and discussed in a very lucid and in-depth way the issue of philosophy of halacha. And in many ways, the things that I'm writing here are further a further investigation into what the Rav started there. I assume everyone read Halachic Man, or know of it at least, so I mean, you don't need to, but nevertheless, if you do know it, these things will connect in many ways to what the Rav says over there. So the first thing that I want to discuss is the issue of context of discovery and context of justification. There was a 20th century philosopher of science by the name of Karl Hempel who discussed the difference between the context of discovery and the context of justification. He made the following distinction. He said the context of justification is intellectual, meaning when a person wants to bring a theory about physics, about biology, about chemistry, there has to be hard data, proof. But the context of discovery doesn't have to be intellectual, right? Like the apple that fell on Newton's head, right? You know, for instance. Or, what's his name? The bath. No.
Archimedes.
That's the guy, all right? Right? With the water displacement and all that. In other words, there was no intellectual method, all right? There was no intellectual method. Here you go. There was no intellectual method that was applied in order for them to understand or to discover what they did. The context of discovery was completely accidental. There was nothing that they actually worked on. They weren't working on these things, right? So only the apple, I mean, obviously the apple actually fell, it's a myth, but nevertheless, let's assume that it did. Yeah, that the apple actually fell on his, I mean, okay, so it happens, oh, suddenly he figured out something. That is the difference, says Hempel, between the context of discovery and the context of justification. Discovery could be accidental, justification cannot. Other philosophers of science, like specifically one by the name of Thomas Kuhn, disagreed and said that the context of justification is as well accidental, one might say, or he calls it something else, it's dogmatic, that basically theories are justified by dogma. And we'll talk about that later as well. Well, let's leave that for now. The question is, what about the context of discovery and justification within halacha? I think that it's clear that the context of justification within halacha is intellectual. Not like, I mean, if, let's say, let's assume that Kuhn is right, yeah, that the context of justification within science is also, right, dogmatic and kind of like independent of an intellectual structure. Let's assume that he's correct. Within halacha, we certainly cannot say that. The Gemara is very, very clear about the way that you justify any theory, and it is completely unaccidental. And I'm sitting in my uncle's chair today, and clearly one must have, you know, a very rigorous mode of analysis in order to understand the Gemara and understand the halacha, and that's obvious. So one cannot say the context of justification is in any way accidental. But what about the context of discovery? It seems that everyone agrees that in regards to physics, it can be accidental. But look at the Rambam here in the Akdamah Mishnah. And as you know, the Rambam had Akdamah, an introduction to the Mishnah, three different places, one at the beginning, one before Perek Chelek, and one before Perek Avot. And here he discusses the role of the Navi, of the prophet. And he writes as follows. וכשתתאמץ נבואת הנביא, אם ציווה לבטל איזו מצווה מכל מצוות עשה, או שציווה לעבור על אזהרה מן האזהרות מכל מצוות לא תעשה, חייבים לשמוע לו בכל דבריו. אבל בתנאי שלא יקבע זה לדורות, ויאמר שהשם ציווה בזה לעשות כך וכך לדורות עולם, אלא שיצווה הוראת שעה, ובזמן מסוים בלבד. ובזה בלבד נבדל הנביא משאר בני אדם בתורה, אבל בעיון ובדין ובחקירה בדיני התורה, הרי הוא כשאר החכמים הדומים לו, שאינם נביאים. ואם יפרש איזה פירוש, ויפרש מי שאינו נביא פירוש אחר, ויאמר הנביא, אמר לי השם כי פירושי הוא הנכון. אין שומעים לו. אלא אפילו אלף נביאים, שכולם כאליהו ואלישה, פרשו איזה פירוש, ואלף חכמים וחכם, 1001, פרשו הפך אותו הפירוש, אחרי רבים להטות, ועושים כדברי האלף חכמים וחכם, לא כדברי האלף נביאים המופלגים. וכן אם אמר הנביא שהשם אמר לו כי הפסק במצווה פלוני תקח, ושדינו של פלוני הוא הנכון, הרי אותו הנביא נהרג, לפי שהוא נביא שקר, כמו שביאר. Rambam is very clear about the concept of just of discovery being intellectual as well. The Navi has two possible functions. The Navi has two possible functions. One is that he can override a specific mitzvah or a specific avera in a temporary situation. He cannot be koveh ledorot. He cannot make it something permanent. But temporarily, he can fiddle with halacha, so to speak, and say, oh, one thing is correct, one thing isn't correct, one thing applies, one thing doesn't apply. Famous case of the Yal Behar HaKarmel, everyone knows, right? So those kinds of things can happen. The Navi can do such things. However, in any other situation, unless it's that, the Navi has only one other role. Mochiach, right? Gives tochecha. He comes and he gives Musar. Anyone who reads the Navim realizes this immediately. The Navi is only talking about things that have already been discussed. Yeah, you know, keep Shabbos, keep this, keep that. There's a lot of discussion of things that have already been discussed, and the Navi is simply rediscussing them or rewarning about them. But he never adds. And whenever the Navi seems to be adding, the Gemara immediately deals with it and says, oh, Zivrei Kabbalah, it's not really this, it's not really that. And the Gemara immediately gives it a different sort of stature. Clearly, it's not Divrei Torah. If the Navi wants to, so to speak, fiddle with Divrei Torah, he's like anybody else. He's like any other person. If 1,000 Navim, as the Rambam says, like Eliyahu and Elisha, are standing and saying one thing, and 1,001 are saying something else, and they're not Navim, they're just scholars, they win. Acharei Rabim Lehatot. The Navi can enter the base Midrash. He can learn, open up a Gemara, he can learn a Ritva, and he can learn a Ramban like anybody else. He's no different than you and I. And if he disagrees, then he's no different than you and I. Fine, he's allowed to disagree, he's allowed to discuss the halacha, but as a halachist, not as a Navi. There's no situation in which the Navi can come and say, oh, you know what the halacha is? Let me tell you. The halacha is so and so and so because God told me. Hashem amar li ki perushi hu anachot. Yeah? God told me I'm right. Or halacha is like Rabbi Eliezer. Kadosh Baruch Hu told me it's like Rabbi Eliezer. Don't worry. I got this covered. Yeah? He doesn't have anything covered. He can't cover anything. The only thing he can do is learn the halacha and learn the Gemara like anybody else. There's no way that the context of discovery will be accidental, from Shamayim, spiritual. There's no spirituality, I know this is a bit harsh, but there's no spirituality in the halachic system. There is intellectualism in the halachic system. Clearly everything comes from HaKadosh Baruch Hu and so forth, but the way that things are determined, the way that things are learned out, the way that things are discovered, are intellectual. There's nothing that just comes. There's nothing that just like arrives, appears. The Navi who does that is Chayav Mita. Kmo Navi Shekel. It's a lie for him to come into the Beis Midrash and say, halacha is like Rabbi Yoshua, that's Navi Sheker. We kill people like that, all right? So it's not a good thing, that's a negative, yeah. So all in all, we see here that the context of discovery within halacha is also intellectual. This serves, as my first point, to solidify the halacha as an intellectual system, as a completely intellectual system from start to finish, from discovery to justification, the whole thing. From beginning to end, is an intellectual system. Whether this is a chiddush to you, not a chiddush to you, I don't know. But the point is, we don't involve anything else. We don't involve anything else, not emotions, spirituality, notions. Even the prophet, who's a great man, cannot in any way involve himself erroneously in the method of halacha. The second problem is... Questions? The second problem is a problem of truth. Okay? Every field needs truth conditions. Anyone who's learned philosophy knows this. Yeah? The question of what exists out there, right? What is the truth about the world? Is something that many, many philosophers, maybe perhaps it's the question in philosophy, many philosophers dealt with, and it's a very time-consuming effort to see exactly what is out there from the Platonist world of ideas, yeah, which supposedly exists. Right? It's not just a world of ideas. a world that exists of ideas. You have, you have Bishop Berkeley and his idea about the world not existing at all to some extent, but only, essence is simply perception, according to him. And you have many other philosophers who dealt with different modes of apprehending reality and trying to figure out what's out there. And also with regards to halacha. If halacha is truly an intellectual system, I guess the question is, can we reach truth? With this intellectual system, can we reach a truth within halacha? What is the truth? Because if we can't reach truth, to some extent, if everything's relative, you know. So the question is, it dilutes, so to speak, the system, dilutes the integrity of the system, and we need to know what's the truth, one might say, within halacha. So I guess this comes to the question of whether there is even a truth, whether there is one truth. I've often wondered about this, maybe you have as well. Is there a truth? Meaning Hashem gave the Torah, right? So he must have meant something. Like, what did he mean? You know, when he said, Lotev Hashem G'diba Chalavim, right? So what did he mean? Did he mean like Rabbi Yosef Glili, that chicken's okay, you know? Or did he mean like Chachamim, that chicken's not okay? What did he mean? So you'll say, well, you know, you could explain this way and that way. I understand you can explain different ways, but what did he mean? Yeah. So supposedly these things have a meaning. You have two options, really. You can go according to the Shita of the Ritva. It's quoted in a very obscure Shut, Mishpatei Shmuel, where he says basically that there is no truth, meaning HaKadosh Baruch Hu did not mean a specific something. But that's very difficult to say, because if you say that, then I don't know what that means. Like Hashem gave words which he knew were open to interpretation, and kind of just like gave them, and you do whatever you want, but I don't really mean anything by this specifically. I don't know, I think that's a bit difficult to say. You could say that, but I think it's difficult to say. I think a more rational approach would be to say that there is a meaning to the Torah, yeah, and we're trying to, so to speak, guess that meaning. But then the question is, well, we're guessing. So what happens, right? And that's, I didn't bring this here, but the Ran, Drashot HaRan, the seventh Drush, comments about the story of Tanur Rosh HaLachnai, the Machlok and Rabbi Eliezer HaChamim, Lo B'Shamayim He, and all that story. And the Ran says something amazing. He says there, Rabbi Eliezer was right. Rabbi Eliezer was 100% right. Rabbi Eliezer, it was clear that he was right. And the Bat Kol came out and said he was right. Yeah, but, it was Tameh, Tahor, I think he says over there. So, Rabbi Eliezer was absolutely right. So why is it that we don't pass on like Rabbi Eliezer? He says, because if we did, then we would be going out against the intellectual system. And therefore, Chachamim were not allowed to follow the Bat Kol. That's what he said. Chachamim knew he was right. Chachamim knew Rabbi Eliezer was right. But it didn't matter. Kivan shesichlam notel letameh, because their sechel says, tameh, and that's it. But they knew he was right, doesn't matter. That's not the methodology. The methodology of halacha is intellectual. So even though they knew that mitzad ha'emet, yeah, you know that he was right, it didn't matter. They had to follow their sechel. Okay. So that supports what we said before, but it still the question remains then. I don't understand. Kivan shesichlam notel letameh, if they really thought that they were wrong, so, I mean, how do we, could we be doing wrong things? Halacha is always like Beit Hillel. What if they were wrong some of the times? Are we really reflecting what the Torah meant for us to be doing? That's the question. Yeah. What's the truth, right? We're looking for the truth. What's the truth? So this bothered me for a while, but the truth is it bothers the Gemara as well. And the Gemara says, very succinctly and enigmatically, Elu v'elu divrei Elokim chaim v'alacha kebeit Hillel. Right? Both are words of the living God, but halacha is like Beit Hillel. Okay. Explain yourself. Yeah. So Rashi says as follows. Look at Rashi in source 2. Ki pligei trei amorai bedino beisur v'heter. Kol echad amar hachi mistader tama. Right, everyone says whatever he thinks. En kan shekel. There's no lie, says Rashi. How could it be there's no lie? Kol echad v'chad svara didei ka'amar. Mar yahiv tama le'etera, umar yahiv tama le'isura. Mar medame milta le'milta achi, umar medame le'binyan achrina. Ve'ika le'mei mar elu ve'elu divrei elokim chayim. Right, so everyone says whatever he thinks. You can still say divrei elokim chayim. How so? Zimnin de shayach haitama. Vizimnin de shayach haitama. Shatam bitapech lefi shinui hadvarim b'shinui muat. Rashi explains that sometimes this applies and sometimes that applies. And it depends on the situation. Depends on the situation, says Rashi. Every single machloket has two sides. And both are right in a sense. In other words, in certain cases, Beit Shammai will be more right, one might say. And in certain cases, Beit Hillel will be more right. If I do a pasuk like Beit Hillel, halacha lemaise, does not mean that Beit Shammai, you know, is nothing. Look at the Maharal, source 3. He says it even in a more clear way. Ve'af al gav de leinyan halacha, ech yaaseh ha'adam, even though practically, hem hafachim, it's opposites, mutar, asur, tameh, tahor. Ve'i'efshav shiyu shneem lema'aseh, practically they can both be, right? מכל מקום שני הדברים והטעמים הם מן השם יתברך, שהוא כולל ההפכים. He's everything. So he's also the opposite. ואם למד שתי הדעות, הרי למד התורה, שהיא מפי השם יתברך, הן הפוסל והן המכשיר. וכאשר אנו פוסקים הלכה, אין זה רק הלכה למעשה, איך יעשה האדם. דוודאי, אף על גב ששני הדברים כל אחד ואחד יש לו טעם, אפשר שהאחד יותר הלכה. וכך תמצא בנבראים, שהם הפכים. אף על גב, כי ההפכים שניהם מן השם יתברך. מכל מקום, האחד יותר קרוב אל השם יתברך מן האחר. מכל מקום, בכל אחד יש טעם. So he says, Hashem also makes opposite creations. Meaning, Hashem can make things that are opposites. Hashem creates opposites. He can also contain opposites. The Torah contains opposites. The Torah contains sometimes two different opinions, because each one has a kernel of truth. Right? We always explain the Svara of Beit Shammai, the Svara of Beit Hillel, but Allah is like Beit Hillel. Okay. Because practically, Beit Hillel is what he calls Yotel Halacha. Yeah? It's more Halacha Lamaise, or closer to what HaKadosh Baruch Hu might have meant. But nevertheless, Beit Shammai is not like not Torah, because we don't pass Beit Shammai, it's not Torah. It's Torah. It's just we don't pass it like it, but it's still Torah. It still has a kernel of truth. To some extent, I would characterize as a saying that halacha is to some extent the exact opposite of postmodernism. While postmodernism is a philosophy that declares everything to be relative, yeah, well, it's your truth because you live here. If you lived in Africa, then you'd think differently. Yeah, you know. So all truth is relative. In contradistinction to that, within halacha, all truth is absolute. In other words, everything takes part in the greater truth. There is nothing that isn't truth. Yeah, and every little thing. You may disagree completely with the totality of the issue, but you can see the kernel of truth, the little part that is, yeah, there's something to that, yeah? You know, you can see it in everything, you know, even things you completely disagree with, Christianity, yeah? Okay, well, yeah, everything is corrupted there. There's probably a kernel of truth, something that you can take. Yeah, there are things in every single thing that you look at, you know, there's something that you can take. Yeah, clearly we believe that the Jewish halacha is the way to go. But nevertheless, akol emet, yeah, akadosh baruch hu kolel ha'afachim, everything is from akadosh baruch hu. Even the opposite, says the Maharal. So, en kan sheker, Rashi says, right? Everyone says what he thinks, and sometimes that's more applicable, sometimes that's more applicable. Generally, we have a halacha. We have a specific halacha that we go by. But what comes out of Rashi and the Maharal, which is very interesting, and this is a shir on it to itself, we can do a different time, is that the practical halacha is not a reflection of absolute truth. The practical halacha is a part of the absolute truth. It's not a reflection of the absolute truth. It's good seeing you, Sama.
Go back to work.
Like you said, some of us have to work, I understand. Yeah. And some of us get to gallivant around the world and give shit.
True.
Right. So, basically, once again, we have to understand that what we're doing is part of a greater absolute truth. And that truth is something, which we only have access to if we learn all the different opinions. So even if Chachamim knew that Rabbi Eliezer was right, halacha lemaisa, but they also knew that what they were saying had a kernel of truth. So paskin la kachamim was not a betrayal of the halachic truth. It wasn't a betrayal of the truth, because HaKadosh Baruch Hu is kolel everything. So we pass in the way we're supposed to pass in according to the intellectual method. We don't have to worry that we're doing is not true. It always corresponds to something true within the Torah. We just don't know if it's a greater or lesser truth. Okay, which could make a difference, of course. But nevertheless, it doesn't mean that the halacha is possibly, right, that what we're doing is possibly unreflective. So the intellectual method stays safe. That's basically what we want to get to from all this, is that the intellectual method stays safe. So the first thing I mentioned was the context of discovery. The second thing I mentioned was the concept of truth within halacha. Questions? Yeah.
I don't quite understand the difference between all is relative and this is your truth versus everything's part of a greater truth. So we say that things that are outside our system are not part of that greater truth.
Like what?
Like you were saying Christianity.
Yeah.
Wouldn't that not be part of the art of the absolute truth? That would just be...
No, I don't think that's true. I mean, like, this is my opinion, but I don't think that's true.
So how
is if you look through the New Testament, you'll find some very interesting passages which I'm sure you'll agree with. I mean, I'm not going to say that, you should go around being Christian, but I think that, that's not a good idea. But nevertheless, it's not like, the ideas there are completely far-fetched. I mean, they're murderers, in the past, right? They murdered us, thousands and tens of thousands. But despite the fact that they did murder us, they're not complete idiots. In other words, what they write is, has a sense of its own. So, same thing with, let's take a dicier example, yeah? Reform, conservative, yeah? Clearly I'm against reform and conservative, I'm just saying that for the tape. So don't know, people shouldn't think that I'm, yes, very much against. However, yeah, it's not like they came out of thin air. They're not stupid. Like, they saw a problem and they tried to address it. Yeah? I think they addressed it the wrong way. I think that they're totally off. But, they're not coming from nowhere. There's a kernel of truth in what they say. This is the application is totally off. So, all these things, yeah, they have something in them. But, of course, it's yoter halacha to do what we do, so to speak. And not to do that. But if a person's a Christian, he comes to me and says, am I doing the will of God? Then I would tell him, look, not completely, but some of the things you do, HaKadosh Baruch Hu might like, So, yeah, I think there's a kernel of truth in everything.
Then how is that not relative?
It's not relative at all. It's not relative. It's part of a greater truth. The postmodernism doesn't say my truth is part of a greater truth. They don't say my truth plus your truth plus his truth plus his truth is part of the greater truth. They say, you're not saying the truth. You're saying your truth. But you're not saying everybody's truth. And I'm saying, I am saying everybody's truth. And to some extent, so are the people. But the question is, who's more reflective of the greater truth? But nevertheless, it's part of a greater truth. It's not relative. It's not your truth is relative. My truth is the truth. It's just, the question is, what part of the truth it is? Well, postmodernism really says that there is no truth. There's only people's feelings, people's emotions about stuff. That's not true. Okay? Fine. The third problem we have, which we're going to deal with, is the problem of dogma. Generally, if the halakhic system is going to be an intellectual system, we got ourselves a bit of a problem. Because it seems that we really can't shake off certain things. Yeah. So Amoraim cannot disagree with Tanaim, right? And once the Gemara was sealed, so then you cannot be cholek on the Gemara. And Achronim can't disagree with Rishonim, and so forth and so forth and so forth and so forth. And we seem to be stuck within this thing, like, we can't be cholek on the Shulchan Aruch. Yeah, we can't. There's like a bunch of stuff we can't do. Why not? If I think that it's so and so and so why can't I do so and so and so? If it's really truly an intellectual system. And there should be a way to overthrow, everything that has been said, and to start anew, because I think differently. If it's an intellectual system, let me think. But if I think differently, and suddenly Shulchan Aruch says I can, so why is that not so? I mean, if it's an intellectual system, it seems that we're stuck within dogma. And that's what Thomas Kuhn said about philosophies of science. He claimed that they were dogmatic. In other words, his claim was that no matter how bad a system is, they will never throw it into the garbage until there's a system to replace it. And the truth is, if you look historically, you'll see he's right with regards to Aristotle's theory, of specifically his astronomical theory. I mean, you know, well, he was way off, yeah, for two reasons. Number one, he thought that the Earth was in the center. Number two, he thought that the orbits were cyclical, were not elliptical. Thing. Yeah. So that's what. So because of those two mistakes, so then whatever astronomers who came after him tried to fix it ad hoc. They added, you know, planets here and planets there, and explain this, explain that, and they never just threw it into the garbage. Yeah. And it took a long time. I mean, even after you know, after Copernicus, and after it took a long time. And he says the reason is because there was no theory to replace it. We can't live without a theory to replace it. If there's nothing to explain what the problem is, we're not going to throw, we're not going to toss out the previous theory. That's basically what he says. And therefore, he says, you know, that the, that's what he says, the context of justification is also dogmatic. It's not completely intellectual. It depends on the situation, on the time, on the place, on the people. That's what he explains. Supposedly, we have the same problem. To some extent, we're not willing to throw out things that are problematic. So first of all, anyone who learns a little bit of Gemara knows that that's not true. There's a lot of times the sugya ends with a kasha, tiyuvda, yeah? And we say, we don't know the answer. We're happy to live that way, yeah? You know, they say, mikushiya lo metim, right? We don't die from a kasha, whatever. It's fine, you know, we have a kasha. We stay with a kasha. We're happy to stay with a kasha and the lots of sugyas. So that's not completely true. But even without that, look at source 4. Famous Rambam, called Namli. בית דין גדול שדלשו באחת מן המידות כפי מה שנראה בעיניהם שהדין כך ודנו דין ועמד אחריהם בית דין אחר ונראה לו טעם אחר לסתור אותו הרי זה סותר ודן כפי מה שנראה בעיניו שנאמר אל השופט אשר יהיה בימים ההם אינך חייב ללכת אלא אחר בית דין שבדורך. Rambam is very clear about the fact that it actually does work exactly the way I said before. I mean, the intellectual method is complete. If Rabbi Yoshua and Rabbi Eliezer said so and so and so, and I think differently, assuming I'm part of the Beit Din, okay. The problem is we have no smicha today. But the truth is, I can just undo whatever was done without any problem whatsoever. I can just decide, no, that's wrong. I think differently. So the truth is that the dogmatic claim falls away. It's mi'ikar adin. Mi'ikar adin, really, we can overthrow and undo anything that was done before. Look at this very interesting thing in the Kovetz Shirim as well. Amar Rav ben Halacha lo ke Rabbi Yehuda ve lo ke Ri. Ufiresh Rashbam de Rav Tana ufalig. Ve Tosfot Ketubot de Baruch Hil katvu de Rabbi Yochanan palig beze. Ve kivan de kaim alan Rav ve Rabbi Yochanan ve Halacha ke Rabbi Yochanan. Igen svir alei de Rav eino Tana ve lo yuchal lachlok al Tanaim. Since we hold Rabbi Yochanan ve Halacha ke Rabbi Yochanan, clearly Rav and Rabbi Yochanan are coupled together. Rabbi Yochanan is not a Tana, he's an Amora. Rav is also an Amora, so he cannot be Cholek on Tanaim. V'kashe ech paskinon hacha hilchata kerav neged ha-Mishnah. How do we paskin halacha like Rav, right, against the Mishnah? V'davar ze sha'alti mikvod mori v'rabi ha-gaon Rav Chaim ha-Levi that's on me brisk. So he asks this from Chaim ha-Brisk. This is a Kovetz Shirim Rav Chaim ha-Basserman. V'eshid be'enet gam Amora yesh bekocho lachlok al Tana. V'hadem otvinan tiyuvta mitanai le'amorai. ומשום דאמורה אינו חולק על תנא, ואילו ידע דברי התנא לא היה חולק עליו. אבל במקום שחולק להדיה, אפשר להיות הלכה כמותו, עד כאן דבר. So clearly the Kovetz Shirim says the same thing goes with Amora and Tanaim. The Gemara always, as much as, yeah, an Amora is not חולק על התנא. Why? Because he's not. Practically, למעשה, Amoraim don't do that. But they can. It's not a problem. If you find that an Amora is חולק על התנא, says Reb Chaim, it's not a problem. They can do that. So why don't they? Out of respect, out of possibly other reasons. But either way, the ability, the possibility is there. And where need be, they will disagree with tonight. The same thing goes with the Gemara. The Gemara was sealed, signed, sealed, and delivered. Okay, and the Rambam explains in the Akdamah to the Arach HaZakah why we cannot be cholek. It was all of Yisrael and Kabel, the Gemara, there are reasons why. In theory, though, it's not a problem. We also don't have to think of it. We don't have smuchim, a problem smicha. There are lots of technical issues that stand in our way to implement the intellectual freedom that we have in interpreting the halacha. But generally, dogma is not the problem. And Achronim and Acholik on Rishonim, I mean, really, we know that that's not true. Yeah? The Gra and Rabbeinu Tam is a famous example. And the Gaon of Vilna was especially brave in this area, that whenever he wanted to, he did. You know, wherever he thought that it was needed. You know, so he did. And that's very well known. There's also a story that Chavot Yair says not to tell, but since Makor Baruch HaTorah Ima lived after him and told it, so I feel like, you know, I can do that as well. The story is basically like this. I'll just tell you, I only have the last part here, but I'll tell you the story. The story was that Reb Chaim of Volozhin was standing with a bunch of his Talmidim, and a woman came over and asked him a shayla about an onion that fell into a thing. He should cut it with a milchik knife, and it fell into a fleshik pot, and da 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 da, blah blah blah. Long story short, it should have been dreif. Yeah? So he said to her, she looked at her, he says to her, well, what color was the onion? So she said, onion was white. So he says, that's fine, no problem. You go home, you eat, all good. Fine, she goes home. I'll meet him, of course, look at him and say, what's the color of the onion? I didn't do anything. So he says, I'll tell you. And then he says the following. Du'u lachem, source 6. Banai. Ki mekubal anochi merabenu agadol agra. I was mekabal from the Gra. Chaim of Volozhin was Talmud of the Gra. V'u gam pakad alai linhog ken. Shelo avatel da'ati behora'a ma shanir'a li levadai veleberur. Ach im kol zot, alai lihiyot matun vezahir mila'avor al da'at ha'shulchan aruch ve'al psakav. So he told me two things. A, whatever you think goes. Don't veer for anybody. But if the Shulchan Aruch says something, don't contradict the Shulchan Aruch. Okay. V'kasher yavor liyadi mikre kaze behora'a shedaati nota me'achar psak ha'shulchan aruch, right, when it seems to contradict, אשתדל ואתייגע לטור ולחפש אחר איזה פתח ואמתלה, אף כי קלים ורפואים, ולומר שלאופן כזה או למצב ומקרה כזה אשר בהוראה זו, שאנו דנין עליה, לא כיוון השולחן ארוך. וכי בתנאים כאלה, בעניין הוראה זו שלפנינו, לא היה השולחן ארוך פוסק כמו שהוא פוסק עתה. ובזה אקיים גם פסק השולחן ארוך, גם דעתי אני, ונצדק קודש. He says, what the Gra told me to do, was that if I ever find that these two principles seem to contradict, then I have to explain the Shulchan Aruch in a way that won't contradict my opinion. So my opinion comes first. The intellectual freedom, once again, wins. And a person's supposed to trust his intellect, of course, when he's absolutely sure, yeah, not just on any whim. When you're absolutely sure of what you're saying, then, says the Gra, to Reb Chaim of Volozhin, you can have that freedom to interpret the Shulchan Aruch in a certain way. Now I, says Reb Chaim of Volozhin, think that onions are not davar charif. I don't believe that they are. Onions are not davar charif. But the Shulchan Aruch says that they are. So I said that probably he was talking about onions that growing in Israel, the black ones, which are very, very charif, much more than the white ones. So we have the white ones here. So I was saying that the Shulchan Aruch is talking about the black ones, there are onions and the white ones. And that's how he passed it. And by the way, Fascinating. This is the Makor Baruch. This is the Torah Tmima. Torah Tmima was the son of the Aruch HaShulchan. And he heard this story from the Aruch HaShulchan. And if you look in the Aruch HaShulchan, yeah, in Siman Tzadi Hey, I believe, Tzadi Her, Tzadik Vav, in your idea, you will find this Chiluk. It's fascinating. But he actually paskins it. He says, Bimkom Tzorech. Yeah, he writes it in a footnote, a little footnote, like, you know, he writes like in little letters, it's footnotes. He writes that he heard in the name of, he didn't say, doesn't say who, Gadol Echad, you know, da 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 da, that you can be Somech on this Chiluk. Mamash Kachay Paskins at Lahalach. Fascinating. So, basically, you see once again that the issue of dogma doesn't affect us. In a place where we need to, we can be Secholik on the Shulchan Aruch, or reinterpret the Shulchan Aruch. If an Amora needed to, you can be Secholik on a Tana. And generally, if a Beit Din existed, it could be cholik on the Gemara and overturn everything. Okay, that was the hard part. So all in all, what we see from all of this is very clearly that the methodology of halacha is an intellectual methodology. And it needs to stay that way and remain that way. And that's the major thing. And I'm not sure if you read, because it's a difficult book, but maybe you've read Halachic Mind of the Rav. And the Rav there very, very clearly states that this is his major problem with reform, yeah, in the fourth part over there. that it's not the ideology, he says, it's the methodology. If I interpret it in a certain way, I'll explain it this way. Okay, I have no problem, in theory, with 10 women making a minyan. The problem is that the reasons they give for it are ridiculous. I mean, if the methodology was sound, then the ideology is not the problem. Yeah, the ideology, it's not what comes out of it. Yeah, like what comes out of it is this and this and that. The problem is the methodology and the way that people do things a lot of times. The methodology of halacha needs to be very, very clear, very, very precise, intellectual, rigorous, analytic. That's what it needs to be. And if it's not done that way, then it's a problem. Okay, all this was basically philosophy of halacha stuff. This is like the first half, or first three quarters. Any questions about that part? Okay. So we're almost there, really, because that was the major difficulty. If you've not asking questions, I'll assume you agree. I'll assume you agree with the fact that halacha is an intellectual method. Now, what does it mean that halacha is an intellectual method? And here's what we need to understand. What it means is, HaKadosh Baruch Hu gives mitzvahs. He gives mitzvahs, and the mitzvahs, of course, are supposed to be ethical as well, right? But the way that we are supposed to derive the laws from the psukim, from the verses given in the Torah, the way that we're supposed to derive those laws is intellectual. That means we don't put in ethical considerations. We don't enter ethical considerations because it's dangerous to do so. It would be dangerous to, so to speak, taint the purity of the methodology of halacha by entering ethical considerations. And so many things are put into halacha which seem unethical. But the reason is because the methodology is intellectual. Meaning, I'll say it a different way, the goal, the aim of halacha is not an ethical goal. It's a methodological goal. It's an intellectual goal. It's not trying to tell you always right from wrong. It's trying to tell you possible from not possible, one might say. What are the boundaries? Halacha sketches certain intellectual boundaries for a halacha. The husband has to give the get. Okay. No one says here that because of that he can do whatever he wants and torture his wife and not give her the get. That was never the intent of the halacha. Halacha never meant for that to happen. Halacha wasn't giving a hechsher for that. Halacha was saying, oh, you have the control, you can do whatever. That's not so. However, it does say, v'chatav la sefel kritut v'natan biyada. He has to give to her. So we can come and say, oh, he doesn't have to give to her to solve the ethical problem. That would be a reform way of thinking, which we don't support, right? Because the intellectual method sketches boundaries, sketches limits. The limits are venatan biyada. He has to give to her. He's the giver, she's the receiver. That's how it works. But ethical problems could arise. Okay, fine. But that's not the concern of the intellectual method of halachic interpolation. That's not the concern. The concern at the moment is to sketch the boundaries. Now, what we do with ethics is a whole different story. Fine. So let's see that, for instance, okay? Before that, let's see a few other sources, okay? Let's say turn, I'm going to skip source 7. Let's go to source 8. So when is this shiur? 4 o'clock?
And
then there's some inclined here. Okay. Alright. Source 8. Famous Ramban. Kedoshim tiyu. Betorat kohanim ra'iti stam prushim tiyu. Ve'ainyan ki ha-Torah hezhira ba'arayot uve'ma'achalim ha'asurim ve'tira abiyah ish b'ishto ve'achilat ha'basar me'ayayim. Im ken imca ba'al ha'tahava makom liyot shatuf bezimat ishto onashav ha'rabot ve'liyot besov'ei yayin bezolelei basar lamo. וידבר כרצונו בכל הנבלות שלא הוזכר איסור זה בתורה, והנה יהיה נבל ברשות התורה. ולפיכך בא הכתוב אחרי שפירט האיסורים שאסר אותם לגמרי, מציבה בדבר הכללי שנהיה פרושים מן המותרות, ימעט במשגל, ולא ישמש אלה לפי הצריך, ויקדש עצמו מן היין במיעוטו, וכן יפריש עצמו מן הטומאה, וגם ישמור פיו ולשונו מתגאל בריבוי האכילה הגסה, ומן הדיבור הנמאס. ויכניס בעשה היושר וההשוויה. The famous Rabban talks about נבל ברשות התורה. Less famous, by the way, is that he has an exact opposite thing, not opposite, but parallel to that, in source 9. ועשית הישר והטוב בעיני השם, ואתה יאמר גם באשר לא צילך, תן דעתך לעשות הטוב והישר בעיניו, כי הוא אוהב הטוב והישר. וזה עניין גדול, לפי שאי אפשר להזכיר בתורה כל הנהגות האדם עם שכניו ורעיו, וכל מסעו ומתנו, ותיקוני הישוב והמדינות כולם. So he says, you can't mention everything, right? Not for good and not for bad. We can't mention everything. So we can, you know, we can go around cursing all day. Where does it say in the Torah not to curse? Not to say any bad words. Oh, you can use four-letter words all day. Where does it say not to do that? Does it have to say not to do that? That's the point, says the Rambam. Does it have to say that? It could be naval b'rshut haTorah. What's the idea of a naval b'rshut haTorah? Right? He's a vile person, but he's within Torah. I'm sorry. Right, he's a vile person, he's b'rshut haTorah. What does that mean? Supposedly it's possible. Why is it possible? I'm saying this is why it's possible. It's possible because the ethical system is a different track. It's a different track of the halachic system. The halachic system is one track. It's run intellectually. It's not run ethically. If it was run ethically, it would be terrible. It would be chaotic, it would be volatile, everyone would do whatever they wanted. I would say that's ethical, you'd say something else that is ethical. We need an intellectual system to run it. But the downside of an intellectual system is that you could be a naval b'rshut haTorah. That not everything is explicitly stated within halacha. Not everything is explicitly stated within, you know, what needs to be done, what can be done, and so forth. Halacha sketches boundary lines. Within those boundary lines, we use certain, I don't know what to call it, common sense, in order to make sure that things run smoothly. It's what the Rambam says in Source 10. I'm not going to read it at the moment, but in the Moreh, an extremely, extremely, I would say a sensational part, Source 10. Basically, what the Rambam says in Source 10, I couldn't believe it the first time I read it, but when I went to one of my Rebbeim in the yeshiva, because I was shocked by what the Rambam wrote. But the Rambam basically writes there that the Torah is not good for everybody. That's what he writes. I mean, he doesn't even hint at it, he says it. Yeah? The Torah is good for a majority of people, says the Rambam. The Torah is good for a majority of people. It's not good for everybody. There are exceptions. There are people, and the Torah is bad to them. How can the Torah be bad for someone? A Kadosh Baruch Hu gave the Torah, how can the Torah be bad for someone? But the answer is the Torah can be used badly. There are loopholes in every certain any law system. There are loopholes. The Torah is no different. A person can utilize loopholes within the Torah system, because the Kadosh Baruch Hu gave the Torah, but man is the one who interprets it. And man is the one who also implements it. So whenever a person doesn't give a get, right, so everyone comes running to the Torah, right? Oh, look at the Torah, it's bad, it does this, it does that. That's not true. See, we've got to grow up from that, right? It's not the Torah that's bad, it's the man that's bad. He's not giving the get. The Torah never supported that. The Torah never said that's a good thing. There's no reason for the Torah to think that that's going to happen necessarily. But the Torah does spell out very clearly what the relationship between man and woman is supposed to be. And we're supposed to do that. So he's the giver, she's the receiver, as I said before. That's how it works. But that doesn't mean that we're saying that a person can do whatever he wants. Of course not. So the ethical system is run independently. It's two tracks. They're supposed to balance each other. The halacha is supposed to be said intellectually, but within those boundary lines, an ethical balance needs to be struck. So what do we do, for instance? Source 11. Once again, I think it's the famous Rambam. מי שהדין נותן שכופין אותו לגרש את אשתו ולא רצה לגרש בעידין של ישראל בכל מקום ובכל זמן מכין אותו עד שיאמר רוצה אני ויכתוב הגט והוא גט קשה. מכין אותו עד שיאמר רוצה אני. Meaning, we don't change the halach. We don't twist the halach. We don't say, oh, now we'll give the get. But we are going to beat this guy to a bloody pulp until he gives the get. Yeah? That's a good situation. That's a situation where the halacha, the intellectual system, is kept. And the ethical is run through another track where we work it out a different way to make sure that the ethical part is also kept. We realize, Beit Din realizes, that people can use the halacha badly. But they don't breach the system because of that. That's the mistake people make today. They think to solve ethics and halacha, they have to breach the halachic system. That's not what Beit Din used to do. Beit Din used to say, no, we have a certain boundary line. Okay. Within that line, we will work out the ethical sides. But it's a different track. It's a different track. The ethical track is a different track. And that's how it is for all the problems. I'll show you in a second. That's how it is for all the ethical problems. All the ethical problems. I believe that philosophically, yeah, the way to solve all these problems of ethics and halacha is to understand that these are two separate tracks. We always think, this is our mistake, we think that halacha is supposed to reflect ethics. And it's not always true. Halacha doesn't always reflect ethics. Halacha reflects a certain boundary line, a certain limit, within which things can happen. Bad things and good things, like any system of law. And to say that halacha reflects ethics is the major problem when it comes to ethics. The second we get that out of our heads, the second we understand what halacha is, an intellectual system, then we can start to understand that it is not a system that in any way supports unethical action. And that's also, let's say, look at the Be'er HaGolah, source 12. Right? It talks about ta'ut goy muteret. A goy walks into your shop, gives you a 50 instead of a 20, doesn't realize you did that, you can keep the $30. Ta'ut goy muteret. So, yeah. But that sounds unethical. So the Be'er HaGolah says, v'ani kotev zot ledorot. I write this for the generations. Sh'ra'iti rabin gadlu ve'he'eshiru mita'ut she'etu agoy. V'lo yitzlichu. V'yardu nichsehem letimayon. V'lo yinichu achareem bracha. וכמו שכתוב בספר חסידים סמנתת הפרשני נארד, ורבים אשר קידשו השם והחזירו טעויות הגוי בדבר חשוב, גדלו והעשירו והצליחו והניחו יתרם לעולליהם. טעות גוי מותרת. So if it's mutter, it's also okay ethically. Said the Be'er HaGolah, no, that's not true. I've seen people who take ta'ut goy, yeah, who have benefited from the mistakes that a goy makes, but then eventually they have not benefited. They lost all their money, lost all their wealth. And the opposite is also true. I've seen people who have not taken, who have given back the money, and they have risen to greatness. So why is he writing this? Why is the Be'er HaGolah writing this? Because he wants to give the same message over. Halacha sketches a certain boundary line. That boundary line is not to be breached in any way, shape, or form. The intellectual method of interpreting halacha has to be kept. Has to be kept, no matter what. But it doesn't mean that everything that halacha, so to speak, allows is okay. It's not right to take away from the goy, ta'ut goy muteret. But says the Be'er HaGolah, that's not the right thing to do. And he kind of like dispenses divine justice, yeah? Like those who did so, lo yinichu achareem bracha. Right now, clearly in a situation where, obviously in some situations, ta'ut goy muteret is probably also a very valuable halacha. The situation in Europe where people were, you know, there were pogroms and things like that, and Jews were anyway divested of all, I mean, certain situations I can see where the halacha would come in handy. And it's important to, once again, draw those boundary lines. The concept of arvut, yeah, which is, of course, the basis for all these things, is not a foreign concept. It's an important concept. By the way, I think that ta'ut goy muteret, I think, by the way, you could also look at it differently. I'm not going into this for only 5 minutes, but, you know, more or less, you can also look at it that the truth is that ta'ut goy, mi'ikar din, it's ethical to take, even from a Jew. But because of arvut, we're asked to do extra, yeah. You could also look at it differently to say that there's no ethical problem whatsoever. Yeah, that we're just asked to do more than is expected with regards to Jews. But nevertheless, even if you say that it is an ethical problem, just because the halacha draws a certain boundary line due to the concept of arvut, doesn't mean that within that boundary we should do whatever we want. Yeah, it's the same thing as, let's say, take source 15, Rambam, Hilchot Avadim, / Rambam, Hilchot Avadim. Mutar la'avod be'eved kna'ani befarich. ואף על פי שהדין כך, מידת חסידות ודרכי החוכמה, שהיא אדם רחמן ורודף צדק, ולא יכביד עולו על עבדו, ולא יצר לו ויאכילהו וישקהו מכל מאכלו, מכל משקהו. And he goes on and on and on to say how you should treat your abadim wonderfully and so forth and so forth. And he goes on and on and on with all this with all this stuff. Why does Rambam say this? Or I would say, where does Rambam get this from? מותר לעבוד עבד כנעני בפרח. That's a pasuk. Yeah, so מותר. Doesn't mutar mean it's also a good thing? So as Rama says, no. The halacha sketches a boundary line, yeah? We can't breach that boundary line. You can't come and say, oh, the Torah is outdated, yeah? You know, the Torah's not outdated. The Torah was talking about slavery. It was talking about a situation where there was slavery. It was talking about slavery for now and forever, and this is what you should do if you have a slave, and so forth and so forth. But it's because it talks about what you should do if you have a slave, or what you can do, rather. It doesn't mean this is what you should and must do. There are ethical ways to behave. So a person should also listen to those ethics. It's the same thing as Eshet Yefat Tor, same idea. Once again, Chazal say it very clearly. Yeah, as people don't always understand what Chazal are saying. Lo dibra Torah, ela keneged yetzer hara. How could, people always ask, how could the Torah allow such things? The Torah doesn't even Torah allow such things. The Torah doesn't say you should go do it. The Torah doesn't say it's okay. The Torah never said that. Lo dibar Torah lekeneged yetzer hara. The Torah recognizes the fact that you take a farmer who raises his children, works in the fields, has never been to war. You give him a sword, you send him with his buddies into war, people dying right and left, you know, he's killing people, he's doing things, his whole world's upside down. In a situation like that, clearly he will also do things that are not of the most, you know, savory nature. The Torah recognizes that. It's not blind to the reality of the world. So it deals with it. It says, look, if such a thing happened, then so and so and so. Right, people, I'm against slavery. How does that work with the Torah? I always tell people, I don't understand what the question is. The Torah never said, I need to take a slave. The Torah never said, it's good to take slaves. The Torah says, if you take a slave, this is how you should treat them. The Torah is not saying, yeah, oh, it's the most ethical thing in the world, you should definitely do that. Yeah, the Torah says, if you take a slave, this is how you should treat him. If you go to war, eshkifator, this is how you should do. If so and so. But once again, we don't delete the parts that bother us. We handle them. Yeah, we don't say that those issues are, you know, not really, the Torah didn't mean it. I think that's dishonest. The Torah meant everything it says. You don't have to be apologetic about what the Torah said. We have to understand that the halachic track is an intellectual track, and the ethical track is an ethical track. HaKadosh Baruch Hu gave us two things, I might say. Yeah, one is an intellect, and one is a heart. And I think a lot of times people think that the intellect is the way that we interpret the Torah, and the heart is, like, you know, not relevant. Yeah, heart's relevant too, within the boundary lines of halacha. That's exactly the way it works. First, you sketch the boundary lines with the intellect. That's what you do first, and you make sure that the halacha is intact. And there's no breach of it. Within that area, some things you have to assur more than halacha allows, right? Some things you allow until the limits that are possible. But one has to use more than just the letter of the law. One has to use his heart, because that's also a function that HaKadosh Baruch Hu gave us in order to use it. And that's how I think that you can solve, to finish, but that's how I think that you can solve these conflicts. When one understands that these two systems, meaning ethics and halacha, are two separate systems, one working within the other, and one not working exactly in coincidence with the other, then I think that most of these problems can be solved. All right, I think we'll have to come in here right to daven, so finish here. No, it's fine.